Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your publicly demanded penance of music, news, and journalism, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. What do you mean? What do you mean? Joe Coscarelli.
Nodding my head, yes.
Yes. Who's your best friend, Joe Coscarelli?
That's my best friend.
Yeah, who is your best friend?
It's Pooh Bear right now. Today it's Pooh Bear.
Okay, so as we were talking about earlier today, Pooh Bear has only two friends in this life. One is Joe Coscarelli, and the other is Justin Bieber. And we were just listening to What Do You Mean? The second of what are probably going to be 40 or 50 question-themed Justin Bieber records in 2015.
All of them co-written with the man, Pooh Bear.
Bieber's kind of having a moment. Bieber's positioning himself as a genuine pop star in a kind of post-EDM context, a modern or post-EDM context.
And what a move.
It's the obvious thing for him to do. We can talk a little bit later about whether his heart's in it and whether it's the right thing for him to do. But as a sort of strategy, it's certainly a smart idea.
Thanks to Diplo, thanks to Skrillex and Scooter Braun.
A lot of people have been conscripted, is perhaps the word, to make this thing happen. But the person who we can most look to and say, here's the engine that's really pulling together, is Pooh Bear. Pooh Bear is a songwriter, has been a songwriter for many, many years, was sort of in the weeds for many years in the 2000s and early 2010s.
Making hits, you just didn't know it.
Right. A guy who is a shadow force on some records that you know, Peaches and Cream, Usher's Caught Up, songs like that.
Make It Rain.
Make It Rain. We'll talk a little bit about the Scott Storch period later. Has sort of always been near the center, but not at the center, but never as prominent as he is right now, as kind of the main creative engine behind Justin Bieber's songwriting for the last, say, 2 years, it seems. You had the opportunity to spend some time with Pooh Bear recently.
Quality time.
Yeah. What'd you guys eat? I'm kind of curious.
We didn't eat.
We didn't eat.
We just chilled. No, we were in the studio.
Fat Burger?
No, we just chilled.
We do interviews really differently.
Yeah, you're always with the food?
I'm just saying, like, you know, you might want to bring a cookie or something.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, you know, get them comfortable.
No, we were too busy. It was...
It
was just talking.
Okay,
you know?
Great.
There's no time for food. Although I had In-N-Out right before I got to his studio.
Okay, well, that's acceptable. Yeah. You expensed it, I hope.
Yeah, it's right around the corner.
Great. So, okay, Pooh Bear has not done a lot of press.
No, Pooh Bear, this was his first sit-down
extensive interview. Yeah. I mean, there's little things here
and there. Yeah, he'd been on the phone with a few journalists, but this is the first time he'd ever sat down and told his story.
And it seems like he has a pretty fascinating story. So why don't you start us from the OG days and then walk us up towards 2013-era Bieber.
So Pooh Bear, born in New Haven, Connecticut. This was 1980, I think. He just turned 36. His family home was destroyed when he was 9 years old in a tornado.
In New Haven?
Very rare. I looked it up.
A couple
tornadoes hit New Haven that year.
Wow.
This is reporting, you know, I'm just checking facts.
Was that in the archives? Was that in the NYT archives?
It was. I didn't see it in the
New Haven Register, archives, like in Nexus or something?
Yeah, I think some local press.
Wow.
I think it was a tough time. His dad had just left him, his mom, and his brother. You know, they live in homeless shelters for a few years. Eventually, their church raises them some money so they can move. And they move down south, and they end up in College Park in Atlanta, Georgia, which, as Pooh Bear described it quite accurately, at the time was sort of like this new music mecca. Especially for black music.
Sure. So we're talking the early to mid-90s at this point.
Yes.
We're talking LaFace era.
Exactly.
We're talking early Freaknik, all that stuff.
So when he gets there...
Dungeon Family.
He grew up very religious, wasn't really allowed to listen to pop music, but says he used to sneak Stevie Wonder songs and was like, this is what I want to do. He hadn't quite developed a voice yet. But he knew he had some connection to the music. So when he gets to Atlanta... Kid groups are just popping at the moment. There's Crisscross, there's Another Bad Creation, it was in the air that if your kids, you know, in the neighborhood, you're going to start a little group. So he starts
much like Atlanta in 2015.
Much like Atlanta in 2015. Yeah. So he starts with the neighborhood kids. You know, they make a little group, and the way he described it is like one of their parents sees us, you know, singing and dancing, and sees dollar signs, and is like, "Let's do this." Mm-hmm. So, you know, they get thrown in the studio at a pretty young age. And they were actually – he was friendly with the kids from ABC. Interesting story he told, which sort of wraps into this songwriter narrative and this idea of, you know, shadowy music business figures. He says that when Criss Cross was dissing ABC,
yeah,
he came back with a rap because those were his friends. And he came back with, you know, with a rap back to Criss Cross. At the time, he was mostly rapping.
Mm-hmm. And he came back with it like it's on a record somewhere? Or?
Well, this is what happened. He says that ABC gets going on tour. Then all of a sudden he hears like a compilation tape or something. And his verse is on the tape, rapped by one of the kids from
what?
Another Bad Creation.
They Grandmaster Cazzed him?
They Grandmaster Cazzed
him.
Oh,
my Lord.
In his telling. Again, I didn't confirm this with the kids from ABC.
That's going to be next week's podcast. Yeah. It's like a defense, a rebuttal by the members of Another Bad Creation.
And so he said, you know, I heard it and like he was like, I didn't have any way to get in touch with them. They're on tour. This is the early 90s. He couldn't, you know, shoot him a Snapchat or whatever And he was like, what is this? Like, he was like, I just wanted to at least like be able to talk to them about it so we could celebrate it together. Like, he was like, I wasn't really mad because I wrote it for them, but I just wanted to know what was up. So that was his very first time sort of getting ripped off as a songwriter.
Heartbreaking.
Which, you know, would happen many times over the rest of his career.
I'd like to see an Artspeed follow on this.
It could happen. I think the audience for it is sitting at this table.
That's all right, though. Who are we not satisfying if not ourselves?
So he's in a bunch of groups, one called Young Harmony. I found a 12-inch of theirs for sale on eBay for a song called She's Turning Me On.
He was like,
I wrote that song when I was 12 or 13. Like, I had no idea.
But is that the type of 12-inch where it's like 42 cents or is it like $67?
No, it was like $3, but it was gone. And I sent it the link to Pooh Bear, and he was like, I don't even have a copy of this song. Like, I don't know where this came from.
Amazing. Yo, we're about to blow up that Young Harmony 12-inch. Like, literally, like, that's about to become an in-demand 12-inch. Like, Great Diggers. It's going to be in Wax Poetics next month.
Yeah, totally. So they're signing deals. He signs
and that's on a major label or
local labels. Jungle Juice Records, I think, was what it was. Just like, you know, super local Atlanta stuff. And then at 15, he signs a deal with LaFace, which, you know.
As an artist
in a group.
Called?
Friction.
Spelled correctly?
Friction.
Like, not like FRIXXXION.
I don't think so.
If I started a group called Friction, that's how it'd be spelled. Right. Yeah.
But, you know, so they're doing talent shows. He's saying, like, you know, this was a time when, like, you could be in Atlanta at a talent show and an Usher would be performing and 112 would be performing and Jagged Edge would be performing. And they're all just kids.
Right. And maybe like L.A. Reid or Babyface in the audience.
Right.
Or, like, someone,
so it was just a real moment. And that was sort of his introduction to the music world. Now, all these groups sort of floundered because he's got, you know, bad managers, people pocketing his advance. Mm-hmm. He was like, you know, like when we signed his first deal, he was like, I got a jean suit that was like burnt orange. He was like, that was like my payment. So, you know, teenagers just getting taken advantage of.
In those groups, was there anybody of note that was in those groups as well who would go on to do other stuff? Or was it really was just like a bunch of local
kids?
Yeah,
I think he's probably the winner from those groups. But they were, you know, third tier because they're not the ones that we know from that era.
All right, so everybody set your eBay alerts for Young Harmony and Friction. LaFace.
Yep.
All right, everybody get on that.
And then he's in high school and he's starting to get a little bit of a grasp of the industry, realizing, like, I didn't see my money from whatever I was doing as a kid. So through his cousin, Courtney Sills, known as Bear.
Yeah, sure.
I think coincidentally.
Mm-hmm.
He gets hooked up with 112. Courtney Sills discovered Jagged Edge, 112, at the same high school talent show, according to Pooh Bear. So he gets put with them in the studio because, his, you know, Courtney Sills sees some talent in him and it's like, you know, write some songs with these guys. Mm-hmm. And so he gets his first placement.
And it's before 112 was really popping.
Before 112 was really popping. So his first placement is a song called Anywhere from the first 112 album. So that was his first placement ever. So he's on the radio basically as a 16-year-old, 17-year-old in high school. And he was shy. So people didn't really know that he was succeeding on this level. And he was saying, you know, I had my teachers telling me I better study, like, you're not going to make it in the music industry. And he was like, I'm really because, like, my song is on the radio as we speak. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of his introduction to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. Next 112 album comes around. He gets flown up to New York, meets Puff Daddy, is in the studio with 112, and they come up with Peaches and Cream, mm-hmm. which ends up being the biggest song of their career, I think, pretty inarguably.
Yeah, sure.
You know, he starts to have some success, and then word gets around. He's with Darren Jones from 112, is sort of his main writing partner from the group, and then they get discovered as songwriters and end up with Dre and Vidal, mm-hmm. And start doing tracks for Usher in the beginning of what became Confessions. Mm-hmm. And this is before To Hear Pubertal. It was before Jermaine Dupri got brought in. They did Superstar, mm-hmm. obviously about Chili, mm-hmm. and sort of went to this whole narrative.
So basically, Pooh Bear is saying that he helped to set the tone for the narrative of that record.
Right.
Which is the most important record of Usher's career.
And what he was saying is, like, I wrote that record based on, like, what I saw in the press, what I saw on TV, like, how, like, I saw he was in this relationship with a famous woman, and he was, you know, I'll be your groupie, mm-hmm. superstar. He was fan fiction, basically. Sure. And then, you know, L.A. Reid loves it. His main problem was then Chili and Usher break up, and he's like, oh no, this isn't going to make the album.
And yet,
then it becomes a whole story, and then it's Confessions that we all know and love, which is, I think, is like the second biggest selling album of that decade or something.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I'm not sure if it's Diamond, but it's definitely multi-platinum.
Yeah.
So he did, what other records on that album?
Caught Up.
Let's listen to Caught Up, actually. This is Usher, Caught Up, written partially or wholly by Pooh Bear?
I think partially.
Partially
by Pooh
Bear. Written with Pooh Bear.
Until I met this girl, turn the tables around. She called me by surprise and no.
You listen to Peaches and Cream, you listen to Caught Up, they are so specific to that moment, up-tempo, high energy, I wouldn't say sensual, but like at least somewhat emotional R&B records, mm-hmm. which is very, very specific to that moment. I mean, they're not ballads at all, they're dance records, but they also have feeling in them.
And they're the R&B that I grew up on, mm-hmm. and that Justin Bieber grew up on.
Yes, absolutely. What happens post-Usher to Pooh Bear?
So you think that, you know, you're getting these giant placements, like you should, that's it. Like, you did it.
You should get like an ASCAP check for like $438,000.
You made number one records. Apparently, music business, not that easy.
Oh my God.
So he's still struggling. You know, he's got bad deals. He owes lawyers
certain
amounts
of
money.
People are just taking money.
He shares his publishing with, you know, his cousin who discovered him. Like, all sorts of difficult arrangements.
He's getting Pandora numbers.
Yeah, and it's...
He's getting like 0.00004 cents a spin.
And yet he's not Dr. Luke.
Right.
From there, you know, he's floating around, you know, now he's a little bit of a hit maker. He does some stuff for Danity Kane, like Ruben Studdard. Mm. And eventually he makes his way down to Miami.
As everyone did. This is mid-2000s, right. Probably. Yeah, I mean, there was that moment in like 05, 06 where all of a sudden everything that was in Atlanta, everyone relocated to Miami because they're like, it's super close and the weather's great. Right.
And so Pooh Bear is sort of like almost like a Forrest Gump character in that way, where he's there for all of these major shifts, mm-hmm. in pop music, and he's in the background of all the photos. You know what I mean? And you don't know his face. He's probably not in the videos, mm-hmm. but like he's crucial to making these sounds.
And it's worth saying that, like, you know, the era where he was doing those records for Usher and for 112, you know, right now in 2015, and I would venture to say as far back as Neptune's era,
right,
the way that media engaged with production, especially in hip-hop and R&B, it's evolved and it's grown, and people care about Metro Boomin as much as they care about Future.
There's way more shine to go around on the internet.
Yeah, but at the time, it's not like people were doing profile stories on the guy who wrote Peaches and Cream.
Where were you, John?
Maybe in grad school.
Okay.
I have an excuse, I think, generally speaking. But that would have been a great look. That's what I should have been doing. Would have gotten here a lot faster. It's an era, like right now, when there's a great country music songwriter, a great pop songwriter, I feel like at this point, you're writing about Pooh Bear. I mean, we're talking about Bieber. I wrote about Coo Carell, who was Bieber's vocal producer.
Exactly.
I mean, Everything can be so granular right now, and you can have access to all parts of the process. But that was an era when you could legitimately write a hit song, and no one would know who the hell you were.
Quentin Miller, call me.
Yo, real talk. Yeah, call any of us.
Yeah.
DM.
We're here.
Yeah. I got you on Instagram, Twitter, whatever you want, man.
So, I mean, the period of Pooh Bear's life that I most want to see a movie made about or a reality show or something mm-hmm. is, so he goes to Miami and he hooks up with Scott Storch, who's he's just starting this rise, and he's like, you know what I'm doing with my sound, you're moving into my house.
Yikes.
He's living with Scott Storch. First, things were good. They're living in...
like Star Island or something? Or
no, this is before Palm Island, which is the house on Cribs.
Okay.
First, they have another house, and they would drive... He said, you know, every morning they get in the car, they drive to work, to the studio. That's when things were good.
Yeah,
things
sure.
are good when you have to wake up in the morning and drive
go
to work.
Go somewhere, yeah.
Then, you know, Scott Storch starts making $200,000 a beat.
Yeah.
And he buys a house on Palm Island.
Yeah.
That's the one on MTV Cribs.
Mm-hmm.
And then he builds a $1 million studio in the house. All of a sudden, it's easier to put off working when it's right in front of you,
of
and
course.
You're like, "Let's go to South Beach. We'll come back to the house after
the studio's
and,
here.
And record
yeah,
the
sure.
studio's here." So we all know what happened to Scott Storch, Paris Hilton.
Yes,
Brooke Hogan was around.
Lil' Kim.
Maybe.
Yeah. No, Scott. Yeah, he had a bumpy few years, sort of perpetually in a comeback the last two or three years.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, the biggest thing he did recently was the thing where he's like on a keyboard, an EDM beat while getting a haircut.
Yeah, beautiful.
That was great.
Great YouTube video.
No, it was honestly, like, I'm not going to, like, is that in the Whitney Biennial?
The New Museum, maybe.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. Like, I would probably pay $18,000 for, like, a sort of, like, Namjoon Paik kind of take on that. So, you know, if someone out there can make that happen, get at me and we'll talk.
So, you know, Pooh Bear speaks very highly of Scott Storch as a musician, says, you know, he was always making his own beats, not doing what some other super producers do and maybe have...
Yeah, like five or six guys, right?
Yeah, so...
I mean, whatever you say about Scott Storch, he is a musician.
So they're you know, they're making hits, they're making money. Pooh Bear, still not really getting paid.
Just hanging out. He's getting paid in kind.
Right, you know, constantly owed money... That sort of thing.
Right. But he gets to sleep in a nice bed, in a big house, in a fancy neighborhood. This is the filthy lucre that draws people in.
Yeah.
So that's for about how long, that period?
3 years.
After 3 years, what happens? He just sort of realizes, like, this is a dead end for me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In about, I think, 2007, he moves to L.A.
Mm-hmm. Dolo. Also, completely.
Yeah. And, you know, sleeping on couches in studios.
Like, with,
just
no,
like,
with no plan.
Yeah. Well, you know, just trying to start again on his own. He... has a house in Atlanta. He's taking care of his mom and his uncle in Atlanta. Like, he, you know, he's making a living, but he's not at the level he should be given his talent and his success.
Mm-hmm.
He's proven track record. But then he sort of goes it again. He spends some time in Vegas at a studio called the Cribbo, which you might know from The Motto, where Drake.
There you go.
Drake cut The Motto.
Yeah.
I think House Party, Meek Mill's song was also recorded there too.
And he's doing what there exactly?
He's writing.
For whoever's
various,
there.
Various people. He does some records with Chris Brown post Rihanna arrest.
Oh,
so when nobody wanted to touch Chris Brown, they sort of stick him with Pooh Bear.
Okay.
A few good songs come out of that.
So he's sort of almost like a house writer at this studio.
It's his project sort of with Marley Marl.
Molly Mall. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Molly Mall.
Yeah. So they're, who became an artist.
Talk about a Forrest Gump character.
Right. So he's around too. So they're working together at the Cribbo. The Cribbo is where they meet Justin Bieber.
Mm.
Kyle Massey, one of these Disney kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's So Raven.
Mm-hmm.
Little Twist.
Yeah, yeah.
Bieber's click at the time.
Yeah,
this
basically
is the beginning
the, this
of...
This is like the DiCaprio posse.
Yes.
2.0.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the beginning of Bieber's tabloid era has him... sort of hanging out with, you know, stepping into rap and R&B and
mm-hmm.
being drawn to this world. And I think, so this is early 2013,
mm-hmm.
now we're talking, and it's Lil Twist's birthday. he's House Boober, like, yo, my brother's coming in for the night, he's on tour, but, and he's talking about Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
That's where they hit it off, and there are sparks, and Bieber doesn't know that he's a songwriter at first.
He's just
a guy. For a while. He's just a guy. They're hanging out. This is where, you know, the story gets a little
fuzzy.
A little fuzzy. Like,
in your story, you talk about weed and mild drug use. And
yeah, so, you know,
nature.
This is Bieber's experimenting. He's 18 years old. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, starts to smoke a little marijuana. Mm-hmm. And so they're just hanging out and they're kicking mm-hmm. it and they're bonding. And, you know, they have similar tastes in music. And so then this is the middle of Justin's Believe tour.
Mm-hmm.
His biggest moment, he's mm-hmm. he's huge.
Today, biggest today, yes.
You know, they had a good time. Twist is on tour with Bieber and playing some records that Pooh Bear had recorded for mm-hmm. his own projects. Mm-hmm. And Bieber's like, what is that? This is great. Then he starts to find out who Pooh Bear is. He says, wait, this guy wrote Peaches and Cream? This guy wrote Caught Up? Like I said, like, these are basically like classic rock songs mm-hmm. to Justin Bieber.
Sure.
So he's like, we gotta, you know, what are we doing? Let's get in the studio.
Yeah.
So he flies Pooh Bear out.
On tour.
And Pooh Bear at first is like, you can't have these songs. Like, these are R&B songs.
Yeah.
These are my songs.
Yeah.
And you're a kid. And these songs are about things that kids don't do.
And also, like, what is the thing, the quote in your story? It's like, no one had told him no before.
Yeah, Pooh Bear is like, you know, evidently no one had told him no before. Yeah. So he's courting him hard.
Yeah, sure.
It's like, just come kick it. Like,
yeah,
just come kick
it. Right. Yeah. And then he's sort of like trying to filch the records on the slide.
Yeah, so like, Pooh Bear first says, you know, I say, no, I'm a little defensive. I'm like, these are my songs. And the one I talk about in the piece in particular is a song called Grip Tight. And Justin apparently liked Grip Tight.
Mm-hmm.
Pooh Bear said, you're 18 years old. This is a song for adults. And Bieber's like...
I do love the idea of that conversation. Because I'm also like, does that dude know who Justin Bieber is? Like, come on.
Well, so that's what happens. And eventually, and then Pooh Bear says, a light bulb goes off in my head. And he's like, I'm a songwriter. This kid is so famous. I can write more songs. Let me change Grip Tight. Let me call it Hold Tight.
There you go. About a hug.
Could be about a hug.
Yeah, it could be about how I hold a can of seltzer, too. I mean, you know, it could be about a lot.
But if you listen to this song, and this brings us to what will become Justin Bieber's journals, mm-hmm. maybe his finest work.
Yeah.
Underrated.
Very slept on.
But it's a dirty song still,
yeah.
Even though you change the words to Hold Tight.
Sure.
It's not what you knew from My World 2.0. It's not Baby. It's not, as Pooh Bear says, Beauty and a Beat.
So we're getting, like you say, to the journals era. And Pooh Bear had put together these songs. There's a compilation of his songs. Is that real?
So he's putting out, he's making EPs. So there's Beats to Break Up To, mm-hmm. Beats to Make Love To, Beats to Make Up To.
Hey.
So it's a, you know, optimist. Sort
he's
of. Yeah.
Is that stuff still floating around the internet?
Yeah, you can find some of it.
Mm-hmm.
You can find some of it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And
more homework for
yeah,
the kids.
Yeah, get on that SoundCloud. Yeah. Go to Pooh Bear SoundCloud. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Pooh Bear SoundCloud. Mm-hmm. There's some jams. A lot of these songs become the basis for Justin's single series journals, which they're recording mostly on the Believe tour. Pooh Bear
and releasing this is when Bieber once a week is releasing a new song.
Good Friday.
Yes. Exactly, you know, just, I mean, not, he didn't come up with the idea, yeah. But he did, you know, so he's releasing these songs one at a time. And basically, I remember what they were saying, what was the discussion was like, you know, it's for the fans, it's mm-hmm. whatever that mm-hmm. is. But basically, it's like, this is not the album.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the subtext, which then became the massive text, was like, this is not the album.
This is not the album.
Okay.
Don't think that Bieber's only going to make straight R&B. So Pooh Bear's having this discussion with Justin, who's saying... He's saying, I never expected to write R&B with the biggest pop star in the world, but mm-hmm. this is what Justin wanted to write because loves R&B.
Yes. My super number one contention about Justin Bieber is all he wants to be is like a white R&B singer. That's like literally all he cares about, and that he has basically been shoehorned by the dictates of the day into making these kind of dance pop records and whatever kind of baby songs that he was making before. And I almost feel bad for him.
Well, you know, we can talk about in a few minutes whether we should feel bad for him or whether having the number one song in the country and in the world is more important to him.
So what's interesting is Pooh Bear is probably the heaviest writing presence on journals.
Yeah, almost every song he started with some idea that Pooh Bear had.
Let's actually play something from Journals that Pooh Bear had a hand in. Let's play Recovery.
Recovery.
Let's play Recovery, which is just an unmitigated banger. Let's get in it.
First, I'll acknowledge our trust has been broken. I success for recovery. I pray for us at night. Bless me with a second chance. Never thought I'd see your face again. Learn a lot through trial and error. Trying to make it right. Make it right. Make it right. Make it right.
Tell us a little bit about the making of Recovery, because you know some of the backstories behind these songs.
Well, this is the kind of R&B head that Justin Bieber is he calls Pooh Bear and he says to him, I want to flip this Craig David song. I want to flip the chords to this Craig mm-hmm. David song. Like, let's write something interpolating this, mm-hmm. sampling this. Mm-hmm. So Pooh Bear, you know, is in the studio with whatever musicians he works mm-hmm. with. He doesn't play instruments, really. He can do a little bit, but he's strictly vocalist. Mm-hmm. Melody is his thing.
But so. He can, like...
But he can make it happen.
And he can guide. He can yeah. be like, play it like this, play it like that.
Yeah. So then they come up with Recovery, which mm-hmm. what we just heard, which, you know, has these this dog whistle of this sounds familiar. Mm-hmm. Like, I know what Craig David sounds like. Mm-hmm. But here's Justin Bieber introducing us to a new side of himself. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty much masterminding this maturation for Justin based on, you know, his tastes.
But what's funny is it's simultaneously it's a maturation to let maybe people like us know that Justin Bieber should be taken seriously, but it's also something they're deliberately trying to undersell because they don't want to lose the fans. They don't want all these like screaming 12-year-old girls to be like, I don't understand these records. It's a strange heavy hard pitch and under pitch at the same time.
Well, because you have to remember that this is Justin Bieber in his problem child phase also. So, you know, in between
ongoing. To be fair,
I think he's pretty well behaved right now, and I think he has always been relatively well behaved. This is an 18-year-old kid we're talking
all
about.
Right, we'll table that for the next one. So you're right. He's in that phase.
So and the label's thinking like we don't want to ruin this angel that we have from heaven mm-hmm. in you know tween girls everywhere are looking to be pure and mm-hmm. to sing beautiful songs. Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about Journals, because Journals is at the same – it's both very dirty on the one hand. It also has a lot of the redemption narrative that sort of 2015 Justin Bieber seems to be preoccupied mm-hmm. with. You see the seeds of it on 2013 Journals. Mm-hmm. And so it's an interesting juxtaposition of – trust me, I've made mistakes, I'm growing up. It's also a breakup record in some way. Mm-hmm. It's sort of about Selena, kind of?
I think so.
Yeah, or at least some part of that relationship. Yep. So it's sort of a breakup record, but then it's also like, it's a little moist.
It's a little moist.
It's a little moist in there, in that Journals album. I think that's probably the best Justin Bieber album, even though it's like not in the traditional Justin Bieber discography.
I agree, because in the first two, you get kids' songs.
Yeah.
There aren't any kids' songs on this.
Right. And I quite like just the Justin Bieber kids' songs, but this is an album that, even if it wasn't being perceived as a risk, strikes me as like very competent acoustic soul mm-hmm. in a like mid to late 90s vein. Mm-hmm. A thing that I've brought up a couple times, and I think I probably brought it up when I wrote about Journals, I can't remember, but the Tony Rich Project, mm-hmm. which is an Atlanta R&B thing that was not acoustic in the same way, but was a little bit earthier and more organic than some of the more digital stuff, the Ushers and the 112s and whatnot. Listening to Journals, I remember thinking, okay, here's a kid who's not scared to get stripped down. Here's a kid who understands there's a sweetness but a power to his voice. It both shows you how good a singer Justin Bieber is and also what his limitations are, because he's not really being hidden by technology. Whereas on other songs, you can never quite tell how good a singer he is.
And I think Pooh Bear, his fingerprints are all over this because he is an R&B singer, mm-hmm. first and foremost, which Justin wanted to be but really hadn't been allowed to do up until that point. Mm-hmm. He's also a vocal producer, so he's sort of telling Justin, you know, try it this way. Mm-hmm. Push your voice in this direction. Like, and, you know, Justin could be like, I didn't know I could do that.
Yes. And again, this is the Coup Carell story all over again. I mean, watching Coup Carell guide Justin through a song, as you say, push Justin in places that Justin's not even totally sure he can go, but Coup can hear it. He can hear it and he can get him to that place. Or at minimum, he can get him 80% of the way there and then spit, paste, and Pro Tools the rest.
And to Justin's credit, he knows that a guy like Pooh Bear is helping him grow in this way. And that seems to be why he wanted to have him around so much.
Sure.
In addition to the fact that they were just getting along. It's, you know, it's a little bizarre because this is a famous teenager mm-hmm. and a grown man who, you know, is mm-hmm. an industry professional. But they didn't really meet in that way that you would say, like, an artist and a writer in, from
being foisted upon each other, right? Which is what happens all the time, and right. this is something that came up in your piece, referring back to the video thing that we did over the summer about Justin talking about writing with other artists or writing with famous writers or working with producers. There's a lot of ego involved.
There's a lot
of ego. So it's probably hard for him to go into a room with like a Max Martin type or. I mean, he's done it with Diplo and Skrillex, who are less famous.
But he wasn't in the room with them for Where Are You Now?
For the actual, right, yeah.
Because that started with a Pooh Bear track.
Sure.
And Justin and Pooh Bear doing
and
a ballad.
And Diplo and Skrillex built it around it.
Right.
So that's got to be a challenge for him. So the fact that that Pooh Bear came basically backdoored into the thing. Tell me a little bit about their personal relationship, the evolution of their personal relationship, and you talk about in your piece there being almost a little bit of kind of anxiety on the part of Justin's camp.
Not a little bit of anxiety. Mm-hmm. Scooter Braun comes right out and says it to me, mm-hmm. and this is in the piece, that, you know, I didn't like this guy when he mm-hmm. first came around. I didn't think he was a good influence. I didn't like that, you know, Justin was smoking weed. Mm-hmm. They're getting into trouble. Mm-hmm. And Pooh Bear also, now looking back, says, you know, I wouldn't have liked me being around either. Like,
right.
I shouldn't have been doing these things.
Well, it's an easy thing to say now the number one song.
Of course. But it's also probably an easy thing to get swept up in because you're on this world tour with the most famous kid in the world.
Yeah, the rules don't apply.
Yeah, there are no rules. And that's what we saw with Justin Bieber peeing in buckets and, you know, saying bad things to photos of Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Drag racing.
You should have seen his tweets about the debate the other night. It was just crazy. It was just like, dude.
No respect.
Yeah, it's unreal. I mean, Lincoln Chafee is a proud civil servant for 30 years. Like, please say something nice about the man.
So, you know, Scooter, who discovered Justin when he was a literal child.
Yeah, like a baby bop.
A zygote.
Yeah.
Is saying, you know, I was protective of him and I didn't know if this guy should be around.
Sure. And like that's also a time you talk about sort of like early Justin tabloid era. I mean, that's also a time when like basically everything that people say about Justin is bad.
100%.
Like it was actually shocking for a guy who was that famous and who is legitimately talented. Music critics, by and large, don't have much time for him. The tabloid press feasting
has
on
him. All day for him, but yeah. It's 100% negative.
Yeah, I mean, it's the exact opposite of a Taylor Swift, who mm-hmm. at least with someone like Taylor, even when tabloids really started going after her, at least she can lean on her music. Mm-hmm. At least she can be like, well, I write these songs. Mm-hmm. Music critics generally seem to like me, even though I'm a pop star. She had something to retreat to and to rest on.
Right.
Bieber had almost nothing to retreat to and rest on. He had a bunch of kiddie songs.
And Journals wasn't the redemption that the powers that be wanted.
No, although I think for a certain cohort of folks, it actually did what it was supposed to do.
Right.
Although that cohort may also just be sitting at this table and nowhere else. Pooh Bear, as you said, is a singer. I mean, a songwriter, singer. He was saving those records for his project. Let's maybe listen to a little bit of Pooh Bear singing.
Sure.
Let's listen to Alone.
Alone.
Let's listen to Alone. You got used to being alone. Pooh Bear is a singer. I think he's probably a better songwriter than singer, if we're just going to put it out there.
I agree.
Yeah, that's what his strength is.
Yep.
What did he vision for himself when he was putting out those EPs? Did he think, I have a successful R&B career in front of me? Was he just like, I'm basically trying to put out calling cards so that people will call me for songwriting work? What was his vision?
You know,
at this point he's what, 30?
Yeah,
late 20s.
Yeah, early 30s.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
What he said is that he went in phases. He was never he had pretty much given up the dream of being an artist, but then he would have these moments when he was like, you know, like this is what he said to me is, you know, America always has a big black guy singer. Like, we always got one, mm-hmm. you know, from Ruben Studdard on back.
Mm-hmm. Luther.
Luther.
Hey.
Oh, what a coincidence.
Hey.
Great shirt, John.
Thank you so much. Shouts to Pro Cell.
So he's like, you know, maybe that's my lane. But also, I'm a songwriter. It's what I do. Like, I just have to write songs. So I might as well be putting them out online mm-hmm. because, you know, this is the beginning of SoundCloud and streaming in mm-hmm. that way. And I think it wasn't taking it too seriously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes he would want more and think I could be an artist. But as soon as you get with Justin Bieber,
it's easy to sublimate your will.
Totally.
Is his paperwork right? Like, are we at a point where he's finally being looked after? I mean, I know Scooter is now representing
him. Scooter is now his manager.
I've got to assume that, like, that means a finer quality of legal representation, a finer quality of paycheck, et cetera, et cetera.
I think he's good. Yeah. I think he's having his best year. It will only continue to get better, and mm-hmm. he's gonna get what he's due.
I feel like we know Pooh Bear. We know what Pooh Bear has done for himself. We know what Pooh Bear has done for Justin. Let's talk a little bit about Justin in 2015. He's in an interesting place where he can't be a kid star anymore. He still has a tabloid life, a very vibrant one.
Bora Bora.
Hey, true story. So he can't make youth-oriented records anymore. Masculinity, quote unquote, is not really his calling card. Mm. Journals is sort of a great aesthetic experiment, but it doesn't seem like anybody wants him to make that as his main job. So he's made these sort of, as we were saying before, post-EDM, modern EDM pop records, basically streamlining and softening the edges of a Diplo and a Skrillex, bringing them closer to him and him going slowly there. What's interesting on Where Are You Now and What Do You Mean? Is, again, much like My World and My World 2.0, you kind of can't tell how good of a singer Justin is. It has almost nothing to do with his voice, whereas Journals had tried quite a bit to do with his voice. Given what you learned in your conversations with Pooh Bear and Scooter, y'all stopped Scooter.
Talked to Scooter.
Scoots. Did you call him Scoots?
I did not, but I should have.
You should have.
Carly Rae told me it was okay.
Yeah, that's what I figure. I mean, I think like once you've talked to Carly Rae, you get a pass.
Yeah.
I think that pass is probably good for 2 years.
Scoots.
So yeah,
next time.
Yeah, call him Scoots. So you've talked to Scoots and you've talked to Pooh Bear. What's the sense you get about the rest of what Bieber is putting together? That tension between, hey, Bieber wants to be an R&B singer or wants to be an R&B star, but basically no one will let him. That's the cage. In my mind, that's Bieber's cage right now, is that no one will let him do that.
So the explanation for that is, again, just to go back to for a second to their low period. At a certain point, they realize, and you know, I think a lot of this has to do with Scooter saying, like, listen, like, it's time to get our stuff together. Like, you're Justin Bieber. Let's give the world Justin Bieber.
Mm-hmm.
And Justin Bieber starts to come around and thinks, like, you know what? Like, I have more to do. I should stop messing around. So as Pooh Bear told me, he gets a call from Justin. Justin says, I don't want to do this anymore, you know, meaning smoking weed, getting in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Pooh Bear says, I'm with you. Like, I'll stop smoking too. Mm-hmm. They sort of do that in solidarity. And he says, you know, Justin never looked back. And at that moment, Justin says, I want to make an album about this, sort of this idea of I was so high, people build me up, and then I just get torn down. And he decides he wants to be some sort of a positive light and to make an inspirational album. It's called Purpose.
Yeah, I mean, it's real Christy.
It's real Christy.
Yeah.
He's a religious guy.
Yeah, I mean, or at least the performance of such.
If you take a Complex interview, for instance, recently
One
with
night.
Justin Bieber, almost entirely about religion.
Yeah, so it's going to be like a Christian rock album.
A Christian EDM
Christian,
album.
Yeah.
So Pooh Bear says Justin realizes for the amount of people he wants to reach, it's not R&B.
ECM? Electronic Christ Music?
Okay. We'll
come
on
up
that.
With something.
We'll workshop it.
We're gonna workshop something. We're going to come up with something.
So he sort of realizes, and I think Where Are You Now plays a big part in this because it starts, again, as a ballad. And then when Jack U, Diplo and Skrillex mm-hmm. get their hands on it and they make it a dance record, I think from what Scooter said, that really set the tone for the album. That
sure.
They realized that Justin was writing these songs and then you could soup them up mm-hmm. into dance hits that adults like. And
but there was something almost accidental about that path because as you have reported extensively on Jack U, the nation's number one Jack U reporter, Joe Coscarelli.
And let's give Perales a
shout
out here,
Perales, I'm sorry, the number one reporting team. The Woodward and Bernstein of Jack U. the success of that song is, I don't want to say an accident, but it was not like that's the workshopped hit.
Right.
It's not the one that everybody sat in a room and the Illuminati said this is going to be the record.
No, it came out on a secret album, buried it with 12 other tracks or whatever, and it just rose to the top because it's a banger.
Yeah, and because Justin Bieber.
Right.
Right. I mean, it also happened to fill a real void in the sort of Bieber marketplace.
Yes. So what Pooh Bear said to me is like that functioned as Justin sort of dipping his toe in the water and was like, this water is beautiful.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then that when you get that sort of Christ-like need to show people the light and to show people that, you know, you've turned your life around and be positive, I think he realized that pop music is how you do that.
Right.
And dance music is pop music.
And Trop
moment.
House.
Trop House
is
pop
the new
music.
Judge.
And, the, and it's
Sunday
not...
Sunday morning. My Sunday mornings with Robin Schulz.
It's just not... It's not R&B. There's not... It's just not going to make it to that level at this moment.
Right.
In time.
But what's always been sort of a paradox I don't totally understand is, isn't Justin Bieber famous enough to make an R&B record that becomes the norm in pop?
Well, we'll never find out because
no one will let
journals him. Will not get the same promotion that What Do You Mean?
Right, but I guess at what point does Justin Bieber go like the full Taylor and say like, this is the record I'm making. It's like me and Teddy Riley in a room and like that's what's coming out.
He's got a long career ahead of him, I think. But I think his public stock was too low because of the tabloid era, which may or may not have ended. His stock was too low to have the faith of the world to say we'll follow you wherever you want to go.
It's also very interesting that Justin Bieber, for being as famous as Justin Bieber is, doesn't really have a lot of hits in a traditional sense.
What Do You Mean is his first number one.
Yeah, it's bizarre because, you know, I've seen Justin Bieber in huge arenas and he's not a guy who really had a bunch of top 10 hits.
So Taylor sort of earned the right to say I'm going to do whatever I want by having the track record and having the public behind her. She had an approval rating that allowed her to take more risks.
So is Miley the midpoint between Justin and Taylor?
I don't know if Miley's the midpoint for anyone.
No, she's like a data cloud with a bushel of dreads.
But there's something to that.
Well, we can all pray for Justin. I know Justin's praying for Justin. I know you're praying for Justin.
And
I know
for Pooh Bear.
Yeah, but you don't have to pray for Pooh Bear anymore because Pooh Bear's out here living.
He's good.
And in celebration of Pooh Bear out here living, let's bring the ecstasy back, literally and perhaps metaphorically. Let's bring the ecstasy back. 112, Peaches and Cream. Hit it.
404-212. You got Peaches and Cream. Where's my school? Come on.
Let me tell you what I want to do. Let me show you that I feel to you. Wanna sex, wanna ride with you. Wanna taste when I put my lips all over you. Can't get enough of you. Always thinking of you. So sweet, so very wet. So good, girl, you make me sweat. But I'm talking about
Peaches and Cream.
Oh,
I need it cause you know that I'm a fiend.
That's right.
Thank you for listening to the New York Times Popcast. You can read Joe Coscarelli on Pooh Bear and Justin Bieber at nytimes.com/music. Listen to our Spotify playlist. Check us out on iTunes and TuneIn and Audioboom, Stitcher, anywhere where you go to download words being spoken in an audio format. Our producer is Jocelyn Gonzalez. I've been your host, John Caramonica, and we will see you next week.